bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Back for our first edition, Jonesy, of 2020. We've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks over the holidays. Again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year to all of you that celebrated, whatever you celebrated. Hopefully you had a good time with family and friends. But we are back at it for our first edition of the new year. The official second half of the season, quickly approaching for the Toronto Raptors and, of course, for all of the teams across the NBA. And the Raptors still continuing to battle through, plow through, in spite of the numerous injuries that has piled up for them. The Raptors fresh off a victory on Wednesday night over the Charlotte Hornets. And we're going to get things started right away. After the ball game last night, I had a chance to sit down and chat with our television colleague, the television voice of the Toronto Raptors, Matt Devlin. And as you will hear here, folks, I thought I was going to chat with Matt. Jonesy wandered by, and it turned into a very lengthy discussion on a number of topics related to the Raptors of today, the Raptors of the past, also looking at the league, the new rules and the tournament and the playoff format that the league's discussing, a whole bunch of topics, Jordan versus LeBron, now versus then, you name it, we hit it all, myself, Jonesy, and again, Raptors television voice, Matt Devlin. Matty, I'm watching the broadcast on Wednesday night, and you guys throw up the Sportsnet Twitter poll talking about fan favorites. Now, we should preface that it was kind of based on kind of being a hard worker, the type of guy that brings the lunch pail. It wasn't you know, all-time fan favorite, because then you'd be talking about throwing in Alvin Williams, a Mo Pete, a Jose Calderon, et cetera. The list goes on. Now, the four guys, though, that were listed, Charles Oakley, Jerome Williams, I'm drawing a blank here, Bismack Biyombo, and Amir Johnson. Are you surprised at the end results on who was the leading vote-getter?
The leading vote-getter was Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah.
And he was, as you know, for that 1 year, I mean, the fans absolutely loved him. Now, Oakley, you know, they didn't even have Twitter back then, so, and social media, so... you don't know, right? It's kind of pointed. Everybody, you know, to a certain, you know, age category, right? I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of different feelings on who their favorite Raptor was. I guess I wasn't that surprised. Were you?
I was a little bit surprised.
And what do you think?
You know, I actually thought it would have been Oak, considering the type of guy that Oak was, the type of player that he was. He just seems to be, you know, he seems to be one of those guys that... you know, kind of set the tone and establish something very early in existence. And, you know, Jonesy walking by here shouting out in the background, if we can pull him over, he can join the conversation if he wants. But, you know, he said generational. That's probably, Jonesy's coming back here, he says generational. And maybe that is the thing, that it was, you know, damn near 20 years ago.
It was. And the people that are Raptor fans now that are 25 and 26 and use social media,
they don't know
Charles Oakley. No. They don't know.
They do, interestingly enough. They
here's the difference.
JYD.
Yeah, but here's the difference.
He's still around, and he's still around.
Here's the biggest difference, and it's like the argument about the greatest player in the game. Some people say LeBron, some say Jordan. We were all witnesses to Jordan. The people that are making the comparisons now, right, that are looking at numbers, they're researchers. We witnessed Charles Oakley. We watched him and how rugged he was and how he protected guys. And when they were 4 or 5 years old, they weren't watching the same way. They don't see it through the same prism. So just my point.
I don't disagree with you. Ask Wayne Embry about who the greatest player of all time is.
Oscar Robertson.
Right. I never had an opportunity to see him play. There is a lot of generational aspects, components to that. There's no question about it. One of my all-time favorites is Amir Johnson. I love Amir.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's a great person.
Well, you got a lot of love for VZ too, right?
Yeah, I like VZ too. My man VZ.
Biz
that year, right? I think he captured the imagination, the hearts of the Raptors, and he had some big time performances, 26 rebounds. I mean, and look, he didn't want to leave, but $72 million gave you 72 different reasons, 72 different million reasons to leave, right?
I think, Matt, the other thing, too, about Biz was he showed, after LeBron had given us a hard time, that he wasn't afraid of him.
Yeah.
Like, he stood up to him, and he was willing to, and even his verbal approach to it, like, hey, man, I'm not scared of anybody. Yeah. And I think the team and obviously the fans drew a lot from that.
Yeah, I want to jump back to Oak in a second because I want to ask another couple of questions. I don't know if Jonesy is going to stick around here or not, but it's fine if he does because this is our show, Jonesy. So I don't know if you got stuff to do. You decide if you're staying. But seeing as we've now turned the corner on this conversation a little bit towards LeBron and Michael and all this stuff, I've read something recently. I honestly don't even remember who posted it on Twitter. But I feel like it was a former player as well. And for the life of me, I can't think of it. But basically, the age-old argument of LeBron versus Michael, Matt, you just threw in the name of Oscar Robertson, you know, via Wayne Embry. But the point was made, the reason why a lot of people feel that it's Michael, hands down, is because during Michael's heyday, nobody else was winning. Nobody else was winning the title. He had those six. Whereas on LeBron's watch, and I'm not saying this is necessarily my viewpoint, but on LeBron's watch, he's won, but a lot of guys have won. A lot of guys have gotten titles. In this era, a lot of great players have gotten their titles. But during Michael's era, Charles didn't get one. Malone didn't get one. Stockton didn't get one. Ewing didn't get one. Reggie Miller didn't get one. I mean, the list goes on of guys that just were denied.
Hakeem Olajuwon did,
yeah,
because he was playing baseball in Birmingham, Alabama. It's interesting. LeBron did go to 10 straight NBA finals. He took two franchises there. I think that he's a special, special sure. player. And, you know, I think it's fun. I think, you know, that those generational conversations, who's the best. It's really interesting this all comes up. I was this past summer with, you know, all my nephews and the uncles, and as you guys know, I have two of my brother-in-laws that are Division I basketball coaches in the United States, and both of them played, you know, college basketball, and their brothers were all there, and then our nephews are there, and the nephews were all making the point that LeBron was better than Michael. Hmm. And, of course, that was blasphemy, right, yes, to everybody else that had seen him play. Now, the age was 19 to 23, right? And so they grew up watching LeBron. We didn't see Oscar Robertson play for the Cincinnati Royals, and we didn't see him play for the Milwaukee Bucks.
I saw the end of that.
Maybe Jonesy did. Maybe Jonesy's seen everything. Come on, Jonesy.
Not quite. But I was old enough.
You saw the first game, Huskies against the New York Knickerbockers.
I got years on that. I saw Wilt block a shot from Lou Alcindor.
I did not see that.
So,
I did see Clyde back in the day.
It goes back to your point, Matt, and the point that we made about witnessing and researching.
Yeah.
They are witnessing LeBron. And their time will come in 20 years from now when there's another great young player. And they'll say that guy's better than LeBron, and those kids will say that are now in their 40s will say, no, I saw LeBron. And it's, I think it's something that's real in terms of this greatness argument, witnessing and researching, and not just watching a few YouTube highlights, watching a game like this, the middle of January when his team really needs it. Like, you know, what was Michael like? What was LeBron like? And those are the things. And to me, the comparison of the finals, when Michael got there, he never lost.
Yep.
And that's at 6-for-6, six times the MVP. Like, he just, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. It really, really is.
You know, it's interesting you bring up, and I'm going to bring it back now to Oak. I don't know if either of you seen, and listen, I didn't make up the name of this, so I'm just stating it word for word, so I know Matt's going to look at me sideways in a second, but I don't know if either of you have seen Kevin Hart and his little, you know, YouTube thing that he does His little—it's not like, I guess, like a video podcast, a little series he does on YouTube called "Cold as Balls," where he has guys sit in the cold tub right beside him, and he's had a number of top athletes join him over like three seasons that he's been doing the show. Now he recently this season had DeMar DeRozan and Odell Beckham and Mark Cuban, and one of the guys he had on was Charles Oakley, and Oak sitting in the cold tub. He said, "Man, this is a different era. Back in my day, you know, guys weren't missing 2 months with a groin injury or an ankle or whatever. It's like, man, you might have missed a game or two. You went out and played. You played in pain. You know, we weren't having the type of long layoffs that guys now have these days. And it's interesting when you factor in all that, how much different today's game is, the pro and the con of guys over the years that have had to play, you know, in different eras, play through different injuries, not have the same type of, with due respect, the same type of trainers and the diet and the nutrition and everything that plays into today's athlete.
Well, you know, there is a difference between playing with pain and having an injury, yeah. Right? And look, there's the evolution of sports science and what is best for players and the amount of money that the salaries now take up within the context of the salary cap, right? So if you're paying players $20, $25, $30, $35 million, you want to make sure, right, that everything is going according to plan. Those are the sort of things that, as all three of us know, it's extremely difficult to compare, because it is completely different. Because then you get into the whole conversation about, you know, the time. I remember talking to Kevin McHale when he was in the era when they went from commercial airliners into charters, right?
Yeah.
And so he said, you know, your carry-on was your uniform and your sneakers, just in case your baggage got lost. Yeah. And if you played on the West Coast, Seattle or Portland, after a game, you would typically take the last flight out. If you're traveling east, you take the last flight out to San Francisco that night after the game, spend the night at a hotel at the airport, and right, wake up and take the first flight out the next day, because there were no late flights from Portland and or Seattle.
It's interesting as well when you think about how far we've come, seeing as you bring it up, Matt, the travel component, and the Raptors coming off a back-to-back and a late-night flight home, but then having, you know, three days off until the next game coming up on Sunday. But then you kind of look ahead to the schedule later this month, another couple of sets of back-to-back, another home road back-to-back. It's kind of wonky how, even though we're you know, the players are blessed, I guess, to have the travel they do now with private charters and everything else, but it's still kind of a wonky sched that's really jammed into a compact amount of time, with less time, with less weeks, even almost a month less in the season than what the NHL does.
Well, they did extend it 2 weeks. Matt Winnick is no longer there.
Yep.
That he's orchestrating.
He's got the league head office that used to put the schedule
now
together.
It's mainly done through a computer, which is why the Raptors were in Miami, had an off day, and then went to Brooklyn. It's why the Brooklyn Nets played at Houston, day off, at Minnesota, day off, at Dallas, day off. It makes no sense whatsoever. The schedule, because they just, oh, well, there's an off day in between. That's fine.
Well, next week, Toronto's on the road. They come home for one game, only to go back out on the road again for two more, instead of, why not just keep the team on the road?
Correct. Back in the day, you do the Texas Triangle, right? You hit Houston, Dallas, sure, and San Antonio when you went west, right? So all that is changed now, and, you know, whether or not that ultimately will be adjusted on a go-forward basis, I don't know. However, to bring in a whole other topic that kind of has to do with scheduling, I know that the NBA will be meeting and talking about all these changes that they've that have been proposed, right? Inclusive of you know, changing the schedule of the 78 games, inclusive of, I think they're now taking off the semifinal matchup, which I agree with, you know, where you could have the cross matchup, yep, between the two conferences, reseeded 1 through 4 based on the record and all that. You know, to me, you know, you might as well get rid of the conferences then, right? So one of the things with respect to that is the schedule. I think that they need to go to a flex national television schedule in the U.S., and you can notify the teams 2 weeks out, right?
Like they do in the NFL.
Like they do in the NFL. It's been done before. And if you do that, I think your ratings will go up. Ratings, as we know, in Canada are through the roof. And then here's the other reason why the ratings are down in the U.S. Two of the top three markets in the United States have been down for a significant amount of time. Yeah. The New York Knicks and the Chicago Bulls. And when we were recently in Chicago, I would say it's the first time I've ever been in that building where I saw an empty seat.
Yeah.
They have 20,000. They would pack it in there through thick or thin. And finally, you can tell it's wearing on that fan base. Anyway, that's a whole other subject. But got me thinking about it when you mentioned the scheduling.
I agree with you, Matt, about the down franchises. I also think, I wonder how the NBA is measuring the generation that we just spoke about that watches games on their phone, right? Or on those.
You think a tournament is going
to. No. Yeah. And to your point about the schedule, I would say, and Eric's heard this before from me, take those five preseason games, tack them onto the regular season. Mark Cuban says, why are we giving less when our fans want more?
They want more in some markets.
In some. But tack those five games from the preseason onto the regular season. That makes 87 games. And no preseason. Everybody plays everybody three times. As you said, I like your point, wipe out the conferences and stuff. Line them up 1 to 16 because it's balanced schedule. Okay.
The point was that if you're going to go in the reseeding and everything, why you even have them? But I do like the conferences.
Well, if you have conferences because of a balanced schedule, right, you can reseed.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, like to me it would be make the changes, but try to make them for the better. I wouldn't. I mean, to me, cutting it from 82 to 78 isn't significant. Yeah, It's just not.
Plus, I don't think the North American fan base cares about some sort of in-season tournament, whatever.
Yeah, I agree with you. I honestly think that it's a simple tweak, flex schedule, and then at some point you hope that Chicago or New York actually turns it around from a U.S. market standpoint. You know, not that you care or I care or Raptor fans care whether or not the Bulls or the Knicks are good, but you know the NBA cares that the Lakers and now the Clippers in the second largest market are who they are. They like having Boston, right? These are iconic, you know, NBA teams, very much like the original six in the NBA. Not the Clippers, obviously, the original six in the NHL, pardon me. And when they are good, typically the league is, it's a benefit to the league as well. It's a massive benefit to the league that the Toronto Raptors are good as well, because that league with the Raptors, you know, the Raptors fan base continues to grow. It's not only Toronto, it's not only Ontario and Canada, but worldwide. And we see obviously the impact that it's having with the number of Canadian players in the NBA. And so that's all a major bonus and benefit.
And Raptor fans listening right now are saying, sure, Matt, I want the Celtics. I want them to be good. I want the Knicks to be good. I want the Bulls to be good, sure. But it better not come.
Well, for sure.
Expense of the Raptors.
A thousand percent. Look, I'm on side with all that. My thing is, I'm just saying, why are the U.S. ratings down?
Yep. Yep.
They're down because you have a lot of Golden State games on, and guess what? They're not good.
Yep.
And so rectify that by putting in a flex schedule. You said it. They use it in the NFL. And then when you really break it down, you know, you can say Brooklyn, you know.
It ain't New York.
It's not New York. Yeah, it's not the Knicks. It's compared to, obviously, the Maple Leafs, right, and everything that's happening there, you know, that has happened in the past there, right, when they're down. Now they're back, right, and that's good for the NHL.
That was the television voice of the Toronto Raptors, Matt Devlin.
When we come back, Jonesy goes to work one-on-one as he will hook up with Howard Back, national NBA writer. It's On Deck next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're tight on time tonight because we've provided a lot of content for you, a lot of quality interviews, and we've got to get right to it as a result. Jonesy, a couple of days ago, had a chance to sit down and chat with one of the best out there, folks, from Bleacher Report, national NBA writer. He's worked for the LA Times, the New York Times. He's been all over the league for a couple decades plus now, and again, one of the best out there covering the NBA, Howard Beck.
Howard, good to see you. I guess since it's our first show in 2020, we can officially say Happy New Year.
You're allowed to say that for at least, I think, till January, like 15th, 16th. Somewhere in there gets a little stale and annoying. Like, all right, folks, we get it. We're in 2020 now. Like, let's all back off. But Happy New Year, Jonesy.
Oh, man, great to see you. And let's start with the Raptors, Howard. A lot of people did not see them being where they were at this point in the year. And I'll say this from a guy that's looking at the forest every day and every tree. They've only had a healthy team for seven games. In first quarter of game eight in New Orleans, Kyle went down, Serge went down, and they haven't had everybody together since. So sitting where they are right now, I would say, you know, the guys that are getting the opportunities, Boucher, Terrence Davis, who I think is a little bit under the radar as rookies go, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Knicks coaching, I think the Raptors are doing a pretty good job. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no question. And look, you could look at this from a couple of different vantage points. The first of which is, let's go back to October or even July. And when the finals MVP leaves the championship team, the expectation, I think, by everybody, reasonably, not by any, you know, vindictiveness or by underestimating, underselling, or it's not even insulting, but you lose a player of Kawhi Leonard's caliber, a team should take a tumble. The fact that this team could pull itself back together in his absence without adding anybody else of major significance, and in fact start plugging in the guys you named, the Bouchers and the Terrence Davises, I think to be able to then push forward and be as competitive as they were right off the bat, with Siakam taking this other huge leap that no one could have seen coming, just as we didn't see the last couple of leaps coming. All of that is remarkable. All of it is amazing. All of it is unprecedented, because a finals MVP leaving a championship team in his prime is unprecedented. It had never happened before. And so, I was one who was still pretty bullish on the Raptors as a playoff team. I thought, no doubt, they have the veterans, the culture established, all of the things that made them a winning team and a great team the last couple of years were going to remain. You just were missing a really important talent. So I thought, yes, you're still going to be a fifth or sixth seed in the East. I thought that's where the Raptors would end up. When Siakam took the leap he did that he was showing off in October, November to start the season, then you're thinking, you know what? I have maybe undersold this team. This might still be a top four team in the East. This might still be a contender in the East, depending on what they decide to do. And I think as much as they've been winning and everything that you just laid out, where they are right now as we entered 2020, the question I had preseason, I think, is now kind of almost ridiculous, because my question was, do you keep it together, let them defend their championship, even though you know they probably can't meet that level again? Or do you break it up, sell off parts, and start recreating this team around Siakam and the young guys? Well, now it's like, no, you. I think you don't even dare touch this roster now, at least not the core. Lowry's got to stay. You know, Ibaka's got to stay. You know, you get Gasol healthy and see. But damn, like this team has still got great potential, and I mean in the spring, you know?
Howard, I guess, when I look at it, they were a good team before Kawhi got here, and the cupboard isn't bare. I mean, we always say you buy the house, you pay the mortgage. So, you know, Miami wins, people leave, they fall to the bottom. Cleveland wins, LeBron leaves, Kyrie gets traded, they fall to the bottom. I mean, even the Lakers, you were out there in the Kobe days, they win with Kobe and Powell. Those guys start to decline, they get traded, they get moved, you fall to the bottom. I mean, you buy the house, you pay the mortgage. Yeah. The Raptors still don't have to pay right now. And I guess that's my question for you. with the league the way it is, if they're healthy, with or without another piece, do you see them as a team that could win a championship?
I would have said no in October. I would have said that's too much to ask of a team that just lost a top five player. But because Siakam has shown that he can be a top wherever we want to put him,
right.
15, 10, yeah. maybe 5? I mean, a month into the season when we were having our usual premature MVP conversations, Siakam was in the mix for early season MVP, right? Would he be on the ballot right now on a lot of ballots? I don't know. You know, we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But has he shown the ability to step into the lead role? Because that's the big thing. The reason teams tumble when guys either age out or leave is because, you know, when LeBron leaves Miami, for instance, it's because you just don't have anybody who can step in and fill that void. And there was no reason to think that Siakam would. Yeah, he was really good last year. But there's a huge difference between being the really, really good co-star and at yes. times only the third most
absolutely
important, right? It was really Kawhi, then Lowry, then Siakam. And now it's Siakam's in the lead role. So he didn't even take one jump up in role. He kind of took two. That doesn't happen very often. And so, again, it's not that we're underselling anybody. It's just you can't see that coming. So, yeah, they were a winning team before Kawhi arrived and a team that had a ceiling on them. And the only way you break through that ceiling is to either have a Kawhi or have another guy who can play at that level. If Siakam can truly play at that level throughout the season and throughout the playoffs and play the way we've seen him play, then yeah, this team has championship potential in the near future. I don't know if it's this season. I don't know if it's with another addition or tweak before next season. But they're clearly not going away, and there's clearly no reason to look at the step back to take another step forward option.
With Howard Beck of Bleacher Report, and you may know the voice and the name, a veteran writer that has covered, has been in New York, in L.A., and we're fortunate to be able to talk with him now. Howard, how wide open is the East? I mean, Milwaukee looks really good right now, but there's a whole lot of difference between 82 games between October and the middle of April, yeah. and then you can improve. The Raptors were a team that improved over those 24 games in 2.5 months in April to June. Milwaukee's good right now. They look like the front runners in the East, but by no means in my eyes are they a lock.
I don't think they are a lock. I think that the Bucks have earned their kind of front runner status. And before the season started, again, this, you know, we're at that point in the season that we can start reassessing what we thought we knew in October.
Right.
Everybody said it was a two-team race in October. Milwaukee and Philly. Well, Philly's kind of in a bad way right now.
Yeah.
Their chemistry's kind of funky. They do have some concerns. And the fact is, it's not a two-team race. Milwaukee is the worthy favorite. But I think they're not a lock because Philly can still take some steps forward. They can be better than what they've been right now. Besides that, they just have a lot of talent. Miami is way better than we expected.
Right.
The Raptors, as we discussed, better than expected. So it's at least, to me, a four-team race. I think we're all probably selling Indiana short. There's just that lack of star power. They're not a very sexy team. But Oladipo is going to come back at some point
right.
soon.
Right.
And, my God, like they're winning like two-thirds or better of their games, even without him, with this nondescript roster. And if Oladipo is anywhere near himself, that's a huge addition. So, I mean, look, this may become a five-team race before all is said and done.
What are your thoughts on Boston now that they seem to have gone...
Six-team race,
yeah,
Boston.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to ask you. Now that they seem to have gone back to where they were two seasons ago in terms of their harmony and chemistry and ball movement with Kemba Walker in and Kyrie Irving out, they're a team that I don't think you can sleep on either, Howard.
Absolutely not. And shame on me for skipping right past them as I was assessing. But, yeah, Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Toronto, Miami. Was that five?
Indiana.
That's five. And then Indiana would be the sixth.
Yeah.
Indiana's a little bit more of a stretch until Oladipo comes back and shows he can be that guy. You need that kind of star to get through the postseason, right? But as of right now, look, I don't think any of these teams have a leg up on the others, at least on paper, because while Giannis is on another planet, nobody has like that 1-2 or 1-2-3 punch, right?
Right,
there's no there's no super team in the East.
Right.
Boston's got great broad depth and talent. Toronto has great depth and talent. Milwaukee has maybe the best player in the game and a bunch of really good supporting players, but there's no other obvious star, with all due respect to Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe and these guys.
Right, right.
So I don't know that you can say that anybody's really, you know, got an obvious edge over the others. They're all just made up very differently. And Boston has been really impressive. And I don't think it's just as simple of trading out Kyrie for Kemba. I think guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, the growth is almost never linear in this league.
Right.
You can have some breakthrough moments, slip back, get into some bad habits, or pick up some bad habits, and then have to kind of work your way out of it again, or just take that next stage, or that next step. Add something else to your game. Figure out a little bit better what the balance is between playmaking and scoring. I mean, it's all of these things. And then, yeah, they changed up their chemistry, too. Kemba comes in. They've got multiple guys who left, not just Kyrie. Terry Rozier left. Horford left. Guys are just in different roles. And we all thought Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum could take on more and be in that role. But they had to do it and do it in an effective, efficient way. And they have, to their credit. So I think the Celtics are really potent and a lot of fun to watch.
Howard, let's jump out west. And to me, there are so many questions in the West, too. I mean, can Houston break through? But the one that intrigues me is, you know, it's kind of like less filling tastes great, Lakers or Clippers in the long run, in the end. Personally, I see, with the potential for defensive growth more than anything else, a healthy Clipper team could be really, really difficult. And, I mean, I don't know if LeBron has kryptonite, but Kawhi Leonard starting with a K comes pretty close to it.
Well, not only that, but if and when we get, and let's just not even be shy about it, unless you are really a huge fan of some other team, if you're just the average basketball fan or like me in basketball media, LA versus LA has to happen, hopefully in the conference finals. How could you not want to see that?
Yeah.
And yes, LeBron versus Kawhi, but not only that, but all right, Kawhi takes a playoff, or there's a switch, or Kawhi's on the bench. They got Paul George.
Yeah.
They got Mo Harkless, who's a very good defender at the wing. I mean, even Pat Beverly. I mean, if nothing else, he's going to annoy the living you-know-what out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, they defensively, they're just a really scary team, the Clippers, and very versatile. And, you know, I think the key for both of those teams is going to be simply, what do they look like in April and May? How healthy are they? Is everybody in, you know, as sharp as they need to be? Because LeBron and AD are expending a lot of energy in the early part of the season. And LeBron just turned 35. And so they've got to, at some point, ease off, I think, at least a little bit. You want him to be at his best late. And even a few years ago, LeBron was conserving in season at times.
Yes.
So I don't, you know, I'm impressed with what the Lakers have done, especially being the elite defensive team they've turned themselves into. But they have a huge drop-off when those guys aren't on the floor, and that's where the Clippers, I and everybody else have said, have the advantage. Yeah. They've got Lou Williams. The Lakers don't have that guy. That guy who can go, you guys know, you got to have the Lou Williams experience for a time there. To have a guy coming off the bench who could drop 25 or 30 is a huge luxury for a team that, you know, already has two elite players up top in George and Leonard. So that's where the Clippers' advantage is. But I'm not going to sleep on the Lakers at any point, because I'm not going to ever sleep on a LeBron James team.
Howard, great to chat with you. We look forward to seeing you down the road. And the world came to Toronto last year because of the finals. Maybe you'll be able to do it again.
I would love to come back anytime, always, especially in the spring.
That was national NBA writer from Bleacher Report, Howard Beck. When we come back, we'll keep it local as we turn our attention back to the Toronto Raptors, the injuries, the future, the second half of the season, the playoffs approaching, all of that and more as I go one-on-one with Michael Grange after the break on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Howard Beck and Matt Devlin for joining us on the show thus far. In a couple of moments, we're going to bring you the interview that I had a chance to do with our colleagues from Sportsnet, Michael Grange. But just a reminder that the Raptors are actually off for a couple of days. No game tonight, tomorrow, or Saturday for the Raptors. It was actually an off day on Thursday following the Tuesday-Wednesday back-to-back, the home game against the Blazers and then the road game against the Hornets. So the Raptors off on Thursday, back at practice on Friday, and then getting set to host the San Antonio Spurs on Sunday. DeMar DeRozan and the Spurs coming to town, the second time that DeRozan will be back in Toronto since being dealt by the Raptors prior to the beginning of last season. So no doubt there will be a lot of folks cheering on DeRozan as San Antonio comes to town. Again, Sunday, that's 5:30, the pregame show on Sportsnet TV. We will be on the air right at 6 o'clock with the call on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet TV has it at 6 o'clock as well. So it's wall-to-wall on Sportsnet, whether it be radio or television. Myself and Jonesy, though, with the call. So please join us at 6 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. Speaking of the Raptors, a number of issues to discuss as it relates to Toronto as they continue to go at it without Norm Powell, Marc Gasol, Pascal Siakam, and Fred VanVleet. Fingers are crossed that at least one, if not two, of those players may be able to return on Sunday. But again, we shall see. To talk about that and much more, I had a chance to go one-on-one with my colleague, our colleague Jonesy, on the Sportsnet TV side of things from Sportsnet.ca, Michael Grange. Michael, it was interesting a couple of nights ago on Tuesday when the Raptors were playing the Blazers, and Nick Nurse made a point of saying it's five different starters than what Toronto rolled out in Portland back, second week of November. That's beyond a rarity, but it certainly speaks to just how completely ravaged this team is by injuries right now, yet they still continue to more than keep their head above water.
It also speaks to how long this has been going on, right? Like, we were on the road, and all of a sudden you saw Kyle and Serge go down in New Orleans, and that's first week of November, and here we are first week of January, and you're still missing multiple starters and multiple players from your rotation. It's different players than you were missing against like you're referencing that game against Portland. But I mean, that's, you know, teams will get hit by injuries, and it might, but this has been two full months and counting, because certainly some of these guys, it doesn't look like they're going to be back anytime too soon. And that is a big load to carry for a team. And yet, you're right, I mean, 5-4, they were, in the first nine games since they had the devastating game against Detroit. And you just hope they can kind of hang in there.
You know, when you think about it as well, the team's already had more man games lost this year than they did the entire season last year, and yet they're third, I believe, in the league in terms of man games lost. That's kind of crazy to think that they aren't at the top of the list with all the injuries, but maybe it's more that it's also injuries to key guys. And I mean, there's not many teams out there that can say that they're missing four starters, or at the very least three starters, at any given time.
Well, also, they haven't had a guy out for the season, right? So when you look at, I think it's Golden State. Golden State is, I think, number one, but they've had multiple guys out for the entire year, and I don't know how Brooklyn does their math or whatever. But they've had guys in and out, but to your point, they have had key guys. And what people don't, or people forget very quickly, is this team missed a ton of games last year, too. I mean, there was Kawhi with a 20, but Kyle was out, Fred was out. Jonas Valanciunas was out with a broken hand for a long stretch before he got traded. And then Kawhi was out for 22 games. Yep. So it wasn't like last year was a seamless year where everything unfolded. The year before, when they won 59, that team was, as if you look at their top six guys, I think everyone played at least 75 games. Mm. What I kind of wonder is what would last year been like if everyone had been able to play 75 games, and certainly we're going to wonder by the end of this year what would have been like if everyone had been healthy. Obviously, these things don't happen very often.
So there's really no way to answer this definitively, but I'll ask it anyways. By the time the postseason rolls around, I mean, we still have half the season to go, but I know I was saying for the first, through training camp, through the first 20-odd games of the season, I personally would be disappointed if this team didn't have home court in the first round, because I think they're good enough to say, hey, we can compete with Philly, with Boston. And I was not expecting Miami to be as good, or at least stay as good as they've been. Now, that said, as we speak, Toronto's still right there in the fourth seed and right in the mix amongst the top five. But if the injuries keep up like this and you do still continue to go a period without Gasol, without Siakam, without now VanVleet, realistically, can they hold on to home court? And then what sort of a first-round playoff matchup might they be facing, which could really kind of, you know, punch them in the nose come round one?
Well, I mean, the short answer is we just don't know. Yeah. It's going to depend a little bit on the field. And I think as impressive as they've been despite all these injuries, it's starting to show, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, they've played 500 basketball you know, they've a lot of games, they've kind of given up big leads and had to haul it back. They just haven't dominated very many games for, and the reverse has been true. They've had their butts handed to them a couple of times. And so, you know, you can only get by with the smoke and mirrors so long. And, you know, to me, the real concern is going to be, you know, Lowry, sure, he had on the 11-game vacation there, you know, with his you know, it was the finger injury. It was something he could still do and be fit. And if he came back refreshed from that, I would probably say. But you look at the load he's had to carry. And, you know, why is Fred kind of, you know, why is he a little banged up? Well, you look at the minutes he's had to play. And that's sort of what your concern is by the time you get everyone back and healthy, the guys you're really going to need are going to have, are they going to have, how much gas are they going to have left? So that's you know, you hope that they can kind of muddle along. You want to stay in that top six. I mean, sure, their home court could be tough. You definitely want to don't want to fall in those 7 and 8 spots. I don't think they will, but you know, but I think wherever you end up, third or fourth, you're probably going to have a tough matchup, 5 and 6. And then the question really is, are you at home or do you start the series at home or not? But I think one thing we can say for sure about the East is your first-round playoff opponent is going to be a tough one.
All right, I hesitate asking this one as well because I walk the fine line between, you know, fantasy trades and rumors and creating things and everything else. But as long as this continues to keep up with all these injuries, and it doesn't look like it's ending anytime soon for at least 2, if not 3 or 4 of these guys, do you do something? I mean, when you think of some free agents that are available, whether it be a veteran scorer, a Jamal Crawford or a Jeff Green that's out there or others, you know, a J.R. Smith, let alone looking via trade to do something. Do you attempt to make a move if you're Bobby Webster or Masai Ujiri?
Well, they have 15 contracts, right? And so they would have to cut somebody. And the one question I would have is if you take a look at a guy like Malcolm Miller, who, you know, despite all the opportunities in terms of minutes available, hasn't really worked his way into the rotation. And if I'm Bobby Webster, I'm kind of going, okay, if he hasn't been able to make himself invaluable, no disrespect to Malcolm Miller at all, but if Nick and him just haven't connected, then maybe, you know, maybe there's a guy you kind of, he goes on his way, finds a better opportunity, and maybe you use that space on, like you say, maybe signing a veteran free agent, or, you know, maybe there's a 10-day guy you want to take a look at. So far, there's been no indication they're thinking of going that way, but, you know, there's it wouldn't be the craziest thing.
It also, to me, and maybe I'm feeding the fire a little bit now, as much as we talk about all these injuries and whether they're playing 500 or playing better than that or whatever, they're missing a lot right now, but I think they're missing leadership in terms of the veterans, and that's not to say that Kyle's not doing his best to, you know, do what he can, but when you're missing a Marc Gasol and now a Fred VanVleet and veteran pieces, but you're missing scoring, you know, and if Lowry's already, you know, logging 42 plus minutes regularly, now VanVleet's not playing, you're not sure when you're getting Siakam back, you still don't have Gasol, not that he was scoring a ton, you need somebody else that can come in and just simply score the ball, period. And I don't know that that exists right now on the bench unless Matt Thomas, who's finally back now, suddenly heats up and turns into a regular scorer.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. And you saw it, like, that game against Miami, you know, how much this team kind of needs to manufacture baskets. And they don't, you know, if Kyle's not doing it, they don't really have, and VanVleet's not doing it, they don't really have that next guy who can kind of really create scoring for themselves or others. You know, whereas, you know, Norm would provide that, and hopefully he's back, you know, shortly. And, you know, obviously Pascal does that as well as anybody. So, you know, I guess that's maybe the dynamic they're wrestling with is how long can we kind of just hold the fort until the elements that we're missing, which we do have, return, versus, you know, really making, kind of turning things upside down a little bit and kind of trying to make a short-term fix.
All right, further to that point then, how much do you think what's currently going on impacts what is coming in the offseason as well? I mean, do you start worrying about the now versus what's coming up when you got a Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, Fred VanVleet, all unrestricted free agents, and hey, we're good, but we're not as good as we thought we'd be, and why aren't we as good? Because we're not healthy. Well, how soon is it going to be till we're healthy? And once we are healthy, how can we actually figure out what we are in time to get it done in the playoffs? And how much do you think that all muddles into what you may or may not do decision-wise as it relates to the offseason?
I think the playoffs will probably end up determining that more than anything else. I mean, presuming at some point the team does get healthy, I think there's a pretty reasonable belief that they're a good team.
Yeah.
And I think the flip side of that is there are very good teams in the East, but, you know, there's, I don't think you look at anyone and go, they're unbeatable. And you could almost say that about the West, too. Like, I mean, I think on paper, like, you still think the Clippers are going to get a lot better than they've been playing. And the Lakers obviously have, you know, two of the four best players in the world maybe on their team. So, you know, you think they'll be all right. But even so, like, they aren't the 73 and whatever that number was.
Nine,
thank you. You know, they're not the Golden State Warriors of two, 3 years ago, right? Like, there's no one out there where if the Raptors were at full strength, healthy, rolling, you wouldn't go, you know, they could take a bite. You know, you feel like that team could take a bite out of anybody. Doesn't necessarily mean they're guaranteed to do anything, but it wouldn't shock you if they make their way back to a final somehow. So I think to answer your question, there's just too much going on right now to make any real judgments about anything. And, you know, and I think if they get together and make a real strong run, that'll probably educate one line of decision making. If they get together or don't get together and don't make much of a run, then that'll probably maybe send them another way.
All right, last one for you. I don't know that he cares, but do you think Nick Nurse gets enough credit for the job he's doing when you know, for all the reasons you mentioned, as banged up as they were last year, and then they go to the championship, they win the championship, but a lot of people just kind of write it off to, well, they had Kawhi Leonard. And it's clearly far, far, far more than just that. Now this year, ravaged by injuries to, you know, three, four different starters for 10-plus games for essentially all of them. And yet here they are, you know, again, right in the mix, top four, top five. Is he getting enough for what he's doing to piece it together and kind of keep it afloat?
It kind of feels like he is because in this market, people understand it. And certainly, I think within NBA circles, people are kind of recognizing it. I tell you, one guy who would vote for him is Doc Rivers because he's all of a sudden been handed the same kind of mix of same kind of stew, and it's not going as well. And they're not. They've already lost five games without Kawhi Leonard in the lineup, and this, you know, they're not going 17-5 without Kawhi Leonard, and they're not. You know. You know, I think it's a pretty good test case actually to see what the Clippers, how they're managing this season versus how the Raptors manage this season. And I think that would be another argument in Nick's favor. I mean, short answer, if I was voting for Coach of the Year, he would be 100%, he'd be top three on my ballot. And there's very good, I mean, I had him third last year, maybe I'd have him first this year. So I think.
And there weren't many, though, that had him top three last year.
Yeah, but I think people in the national media in the U.S., I think he caught a lot of people's attention last year. And I think the way they've kind of held to, you know, maintain their course given all that's happened this year is, I think, people understand.
That was Sportsnet.ca's Michael Grange. Of course, he contributes to the TV side of things as well for Sportsnet. Thanks to Grange, also Matt Devlin and Howard Beck. For Paul Jones and our entire production crew, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.